to the Red Dirt Road Podcast. Here today with a couple fine fellas. We got Max Diedrich, my good old pal from Ohio, and cousin Tommy, local old time banjo player. How's it going?
I'm going pretty good. I guess I'll let you talk first.
It's all good here. Happy to be on. So thanks for having me.
Max, I got to say, are you recording from a submarine thousands of feet below? I mean, it is just the worst audio that we can get here. I was just talking to Tommy about he's out in the sticks in a cabin and he's got great audio. What the hell is going on here?
Wellington, Ohio isn't known for its especially good cellular signal. So
it sounds like you're having to deal with that. You're recording off of either a Kodak camera or a Walkman or something. I see the little...
It's a potato.
What's going on over there?
it's not good. That's what it is, Marshall. All right.
You know what it is? It sounds like one of those weather reporters that's like in pouring rain and it's affecting the quality of the audio. That's what it sounds like.
You know, I didn't want to complain here, but I'm actually in a stage 4 hurricane. All right. So I'm trying my best.
Anyway,
I'll send a prayer up for you later.
Hey, thank you, cousin.
So,
I might not be your cousin, but I'm somebody's cousin. I go by cousin Tommy. I got that, but I started calling myself that. I did a show last year with the actual grandson of Grandpa Jones was there. And so I said, you know, so Grandpa Jones is your actual grandpa. You know, but it was from folks like Grandpa Jones and Uncle Dave Macon, Cousin Minnie Pearl, I was hiding from the IRS. And so I thought I better not use my real name, which my name is Tommy, though. But so I thought Cousin Tommy might be a good name to go by. And I'm doing pretty good tonight. As my daddy would say, I'm doing finer than frog hair. And if I was doing any better, it'd be illegal. So I'm glad to be on the podcast, and hopefully you won't regret it too much, but the time is over with.
Oh, glad to finally have you on here. It's been a long time coming, having you on here. I met you back in, what was it? I think May at the Blooms Bluegrass and Barbecue Festival, Sweetwater, Tennessee. I was trying to remember. I was like, Blooms, Brooms, something, Witch's Broom, something. You were playing the banjo at this little, under this little tent. And I sat down.
Suckered me in the folks in Sweetwater sucker me into that every year to kind of lead what they call the picker's corner up. And where we invite folks to show up and play different music. And you know, now, are you one of the ones that played with me? Or
no, I was just a listener, bluegrass enthusiast, eating some barbecue and was just there to watch and stuff. We had the podcast.
It's starting to come back to me now.
I think you had mentioned Grandpa Jones, and I was one of the few that had recognized him, had listened to his music, and so he kind of pointed me out for that, and we were talking and stuff. But
like I was mentioning before, I'm not one of those highfalutin bluegrass people that you know live in them big mansions and drive those fancy cars. I'm just simple folk here, and I play old time banjo. And those were my influences growing up. It's folks like Grandpa Jones, String Bing, Uncle Dave Macon. And now you want to hear my favorite Uncle Dave Macon story. Did I tell you this one?
Go ahead.
Well, you know, Uncle Dave Macon, he grew up in the vaudeville circuit. You know, he was one of the first early Grand Ole Opry stars, you know. And then in the 40s, you got a Bill Monroe brought Earl Scruggs to the Opry. Now, Grandpa Jones, he told jokes and he played the banjo. The banjo was almost like a prop to him. You know, he was more of a comedy act. He'd flip the banjo upside down and so forth and so on. But everybody was really curious, you know, what Uncle Dave would think about this kid, Earl Scruggs, going up and down the fretboard and playing the banjo and, you know, and the way he did. And so, you know, he gets up there on Bill Monroe on Molly and Tim Brooks or something like that, and, you know, tears the banjo up. And so they come to Dave Makin and they say, "Uncle Dave, you see that boy play the banjo?" And he said, "Yeah, I saw him." They said, "Well, what did you think?" He said, "He's a real good banjo player, being a damn bit funny."
Wow, brutal. Yeah, he was known as kind of a banjo player, but just kind of an entertainer, like a showman and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, that's what I'm getting at from the, you know, well, he told a lot of jokes, and I try to do that too. Some of my jokes are successful, and some of them not so much. Which that last one was a good example of that. But you know,
no, I understood it. I got it. This song written by a couple members of the Dillards, Dean Webb and Mitchell F. Jane. Now, we talked about the Dillards actually in a previous episode talking about Dooley. But, of course, Dean, born in Missouri in 1937, passed away 2018. Jane, born in Indiana, passed away or in 1928, passed away in 2010. And Old Home Place was released by the Dillards in 1963 off the band's album Back Porch Bluegrass, an album I personally really enjoy. Kind of had a weird career, got into, you know, basically released an album every 10 years or so, got into some more rock music, and had a bunch of short songs in this album. What do you think about the Dillards album?
Well, I tell you what, of course, we all know going back on the Dillards as the Darlings. That's what I was first introduced to the Dillards, growing up watching the old Andy Griffith show. And I still do. I do a couple of Dillard songs in every show I do. Of course, I go Dooley, and then Ebo Walker is another one I like a lot. But, yeah, I mean, as far as the Dillards were a group that introduced a lot of people into bluegrass, just through the Andy Griffith show and through those old songs, you know. And you got that, and you got Scruggs with, the Battle of Jed Clampett, you know, it all in there during the 1960s. And for a lot of folks who weren't from the South, and especially from Appalachia, that was their first introduction to bluegrass. You know, people who didn't listen to Bill Monroe or never heard of those kind of people, or Flatten Scruggs or anybody like that. And so, I mean, you gotta love the Dillards. And now when J.D. Crowe and the New South, you know, they were kind of a super group, if you really look at them like that. By the time, I mean, you think about, you had Tony Rice, who we also lost, you know, not too long ago, and Ricky Skaggs and Jerry Douglas, and all those guys were like, I think that was the first band that J.D. Crowe put together.
Keith Whitley was at one time a member as well.
And later, Keith Whitley joined also. So I mean, you had all kind of guys, and even, you know, it's a different band now, but it's still a good band, Ricky Wasson and those guys. But back in those days, I mean, they kind of branded as progressive bluegrass or newgrass. And J.D. Crowe had been, he'd been with Jimmy Martin's band. That's how he got his start, you know. And my lame claim to fame is that Jimmy Martin, his banjo player, he went through a couple after, you know, Crowe. And the guy that taught me how to play the banjo was a fellow named Larry Wallace. And he was in Jimmy Martin's band. So that's my connection to Crowe right there. And which is actually no connection at all. But we'll pretend like it is anyway.
Well, I'm going to get a little bit into J.D. Crowe. I talked about the Dillards a bit on last episode or previous episode. But, guys, his name, James D. Crowe, goes by J.D. Crowe, born in Lexington, Kentucky, obviously known as banjo player, and is born there in August of 1937. He released a cover of this song off of the with his group New South in 1975 off their album J.D. Crowe and the New South. Crowe began playing banjo early age. He was offered a job, like you said, Jimmy Martin's Sunny Mountain Boys in 1954. In 61, he formed the Kentucky Mountain Boys, which played in the Lexington area. Name was later changed to the New South in 71. In 68, they released their first album, Bluegrass Holiday. And in 75, their album features Ricky Skaggs as a member of the band. The New South quit in 2022. I think that was, no, two, sorry, 2002, to form the band Wildfire, other than J.D. Crow. And their final album was released in 2006, Lefty's Old Guitar. The New South has over 20 past members, according to Wikipedia. I'm not going to go verify that. So how about Max here? I'll throw you back in here, ask you to unmute a little bit, see if there's some dogs barking. Were you familiar at all with this? I mean, the Dillards, JD Crow.
This is a whole new world to me. All right. I had no idea either of these bands existed. So something a little different from what I usually listen to, that's for sure.
This is the Northern Ohio perspective, just so we know. Like it people up there, they don't know that this stuff exists.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Well, we'll pray for you.
Hey, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
really, if you go down the rabbit hole of bluegrass music, I mean, these are people who sort of changed the game. You know, coming from the first generation and the second generation of the first generation, of course, being like Bill Monroe and that group. You know, and then following up with like Flat and Scruggs and Jimmy Martin and the people that were in the Bluegrass Boys. And this sort of, and J.D. Crow, like I said, was a member of the original band that Jimmy Martin got together after he left Bill Monroe. And so, and then at that time you get into the 1970s, which the music scene was changing anyway. And you got sort of a different sound, you know, apart from the traditional sound, and some of that sound which still, you know, moves through bluegrass music, as what they, a lot of people refer to as newgrass music. But these were the folks who really were the bridge between the old sound and the newgrass sound of the time. You know, the J.D. Crow in the New South. You know, and
that's very interesting. I thank you for your knowledge and your perspective on that. I never would have had any idea about that.
You're welcome. Yeah. And then you get what I do. You get what I do, which is it's not progressive bluegrass, it's regressive bluegrass. So the stuff I do kind of goes back full circle to, I play in Stephen Foster and stuff from the 30s and everything else when I do my shows. And so,
so I'm going to get a little bit into this song. I love the lyrics of the song. I mean, I love the song in general, but you start to look at it, it's got this bluegrass kind of picking intro. First verse talking about his home on the hollow. Cool fall night, wood smoke rise, fox hunter blows his horn. Very descriptive. Talking about a holler boy fell in love with a girl from the town and ran away to Charlottesville to work in a sawmill. The chorus is a bunch of questions asking about what have they done with the old home place? Why did they tear down? Why did I leave the plow in the field? Look for a job in town. You know, at this point, you're thinking, what happened? What happened to his old home place? Yeah. You're thinking, you know, he must have left. He kind of left on his own. There's something about a girl, but you're thinking, you know, he just left his home.
Well, if you look at the theme of the old home place, that's really a theme that runs through this vein of music. And even if you go back even to like, you know, Stephen Foster, to, you know, the old folks at home, to, you know, Mac Wiseman and I wonder how the old folks are at home, to, you know, even Hank Williams had the old home was the name of a song. Laurie Lewis, from the Lewis family, who said, you know, who will watch the home place? You know, it's a general theme. I think it's a very Southern thing, if you put it that way. You know, you remember if you ever seen Gone with the Wind, when Katie Scarlett O'Hara, the land It's nothing worth fighting for, nothing worth dying for. It's not a very good imitation, but it's very much in the Irish, Scots-Irish, the love of the land, the love of the home place. I think it's a very Southern thing. So it touched. I've got an old home place that's been in my family for about 200 years, which I mentioned to you, before we started this, that I'm going to go back and work on the family farm there. But it's very, my grandmother, who's still living, God, bless. She's still living up in her 90s. She's always worried about who's going to take over the home place and who's going to fill that role. And she doesn't want, and I think it's just something that goes down through the old, Irish and Scots-Irish heritage.
That's interesting. When I was reading this, I thought old home place kind of meant like his hometown. And so it makes a little more sense why his home, like the actual home, is threatened to be tore down. I thought it was like a city, some kind of, they tore down the whole town. I'm thinking that's what I thought the home place was, his hometown. So yeah, that probably makes a little more sense here. Going in the second verse.
I got something, Marshall. I felt like it was something that really anyone could relate to. Cause when you do leave and you become an adult and you leave, and then when you come back, things are always different. You know what I mean? And, I think it's something that everyone can relate with, where it's like the place of your childhood or the place of that you left when you come back is never quite the same. And there's people that are missing, and so I felt like it was something that I could relate to, too, for that reason.
Thank you, caller number 5 from Wellington, Ohio. Yeah, that is bad. Whatever microphone. Bad? I don't think it's the internet anymore. It's just the microphone or whatever you're using.
I've been digging around for a microphone. I was going to say, if it's that bad, Marsh, you can just like cut me here if you want.
You know what? It's bringing up these past memories. You know what it is? I used to wake up every morning and, have some coffee next to my mom before school. And there was the Fox 8 helicopter woman. That's what it sounds like. She's calling in. They got a little camera on her from the, that's what it sounds like. It's like, it's like got a little radio thing over you.
Yeah.
So Max, you gotta tell us, what's the traffic look like?
Oh, it's very clear right now over northern, or I guess central Tennessee. All right.
So this second verse here, the girl ran off with somebody else. He's drinking here frequently at the local bars and stood by the old home place. He says he's lost his love, lost his home, and wishes he was dead. That's how it ends. And before we get into the second chorus, outro, I'll ask both of you guys, whoever wants to go first here, what do you guys think about this tune and each of the versions? Which one do you like better?
Well, I love it. It's the theme of the girl ran away and that he wishes he was dead. And that's, like I said, that's also a very common theme that runs through this genre of music. And now, a lot of those songs is that the girl ends up dead in the song, usually because the guy killed her. That's a lot what they call the murder ballad. But it's close to that, but he doesn't kill anybody. He's just wishing he was dead. But you get that. And the fun thing about that, if you call it fun, is, country music, grew from this genre of music as well. If you go back far enough, blues and everything else that integrated into it too. But it's still, a lot of the country music today is still the same themes of lost the girl, drinking, I wish I was dead. I feel, it's interesting to see, even though, this song, it may not be that old, really, if you look at it that way. But it still keeps those same traditional old-time music themes of loneliness and death and despair, which, bluegrass is an interesting genre because a lot of the music sounds happy. You often hear people say that it's kind of upbeat music, but a lot of the themes are very dark and forlorn. And so I love this song. And to me, J.D. Crowe in the New South version is the version that I love. You got Tony Rice singing on it. I mean, and I don't think it's even though the Dillards may have wrote it, that's my favorite version of it is the New South. It, you can't get much better than that. Like I said, it's almost like a super group of the time, you know, with Skaggs and all the other guys on there. And of course you got Crow on the banjo. So I mean, you really can't get much better than that unless you go straight back to Flat and Scruggs, that group, which was, you know, kind of in with Bill Monroe before that, which was kind of a super group of its own. So these are the people that laid the foundations for the music that a lot of the music today has grown out of. There's a lot of good bluegrass music today, but this is the real deal right here, if you want to call it that. What they call truegrass, it's truegrass, and it's I don't think it could be done better than J.D. Crow and the New South did it.
What do you think, Max?
I thought it was interesting when I first listened to them that I thought the version by the Dillards was the newer version. It did not sound as quite as bluegrassy, I guess. I'm not sure exactly how to describe it, but it definitely sounded more modern. So I thought that was interesting. But I'll agree with Cousin Tommy, the other version was my favorite.
Yeah, I also, yeah, Max had texted me that, you know, the Dillards kind of, they got like this electronic music, or not maybe like electric music, electrified instruments in their music. And it was kind of, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounded like that wasn't really, they were kind of one of the first ones to do that. Like you can't really find something before the Dillards that sounded like that. And they got the whole family band in there. It sounds way more like dirty, not as clean as the J.D. Crow version. You got J.D. Crow on there. The recording is just, it's phenomenal. The first version, except for it being electric, sounds a little bit more like when you go to a bluegrass place. It don't really sound very clean. You know, everyone's playing, they're picking, usually got a circle of people, but the J.D. Crow version is really awesome. And, you know,
I think the reason that you hear it that way is because you got to remember, J.D. Crow came out of Jimmy Martin's band, and Jimmy Martin came out of Bill Monroe's band. And Bill Monroe was a stickler that you play it clean and you play it a certain way and you're very precise. And the whole genre of bluegrass grew out of Bill Monroe and playing it that way. And then, you know, he had Scruggs, and Scruggs was such a clean banjo player. And if you're going to follow that up, you know, you're going to make it as clean and as tight as possible. And so with the Dillards, you know, they were a family band and they weren't as precise and as clean. It just depends on, you know, your tech, which I kind of like it. I like a lot of stuff where it's not so tight, you know, because I don't play very tight at all. But I think that's why you're hearing the difference there. The people, they say that, you know, that like Scruggs is the most imitating musician of all time. And he played note for note so clean on that banjo. And everyone was trying to replicate what Scruggs had done in Bill Monroe's band and then with Flat and Scruggs. And you couldn't be sloppy after that, you know, for to be in the bluegrass genre, you know, the Dillards and those guys, they were a little bit different. They were more of a, you know, even though they were more of the new grass rather than the bluegrass, which allowed for things to be a little bit looser.
This version too it's faster. First version is only 2 minutes, 10 seconds length. They're definitely playing faster.
That's cause of Monroe's mandolin. That's everybody followed that. You know, it was all choppy, fast. It was trying to keep in pace with Monroe's mandolin. And that's what the bluegrass counts. That's why it grew up such a genre that was all the instruments played so quickly.
You know, that version I think still holds up. I personally like both of them, like the Crow version a little bit better, but I still would, you know, listen to either of these kind of you know, just from time to time. Definitely the lead vocals, like you said, Rice, I like more in the Crow version. And this song overall is, I could not find the post on this. Maybe it was just something to a story, but East Tennessee Bluegrass Association, they had made a like a tournament sort of a thing people could vote on their favorite bluegrass song. And this was, I believe, number one. It's a very popular bluegrass tune. And, you know, I like the little bit more traditional, a little more clean version of the Crow version. You're heading out. You're heading out to Southwest Mississippi.
Yeah,
what's the update?
Well, the update on that is, well, they do have a big music festival down there that that Larry Wallace puts together every year called the Homochitta River Festival. And he gets some big names to play there. He had Marty Stewart play there a couple of years ago. And, you know, he knows all those guys because he was, you know, in the bluegrass circuit for a lot of years. So hopefully I'll play that. But we'll see. We'll see when I get down there. I'm going to be farming down there. So, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully, you know, it may be a break for a little while for me doing any more shows and any festivals or anything. But it's not a whole lot down there.
As long as we got the get a little internet, get the banjo out, and we'll have one of these sessions here, online banjo session.
Well, funny you mentioned that.
Let's hear it.
Okay, we're going to do a. I'm not going to let y'all get away without doing a song here. Is that bad? This is a song I wrote about my cousin Henry. It's called Henry's Drunk in Town Again. See if I can remember. Henry, he's drunk in town again. Henry, ain't no telling the trouble that boy is in. Thank you. way that boy lives is a sin. Trouble deep. You know the boy wouldn't raise.